You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. Today we talk about project management, and specifically our clinical project management, and how we best collaborate as statisticians with these people. And for that, we have an expert in that area, Jessica Cordes. So stay tuned for that great discussion. Now, listening to this podcast is great. I love you for doing so. And if you love this podcast, then please also tell others about it, because this is free and that's one way how I help the community. Another way I help the community with is the Effective Statistician Conference, happening in November 2024 for the third time. And you can benefit a lot from this conference without traveling, without leaving your home, without leaving your office, without additional costs for travel, accommodation, all these kind of different things. It just takes you to invest some time and maybe a little bit of money into yourself. And actually, investing in yourself has the best return on investment whatsoever, because you can 100% control it. Everything you learn from the conference, all the relationships that you build at the conference through the networking, all of these things you can reinvest into your career. And I know that it is really difficult for many of us to attend in-person conferences, because they are usually incredibly expensive, especially if you think about the travel, the accommodation, the additional costs for just having dinner or things like that. All of that can easily lead to more than 1,000 euros or multiple thousands of euros, depending on the conference you're attending. Now, this conference has all the benefits, maybe except that you can have a beer with others. Well, you can actually have a virtual beer with others through our networking events, but that you can't hug the others or shake hands or these kind of things. But otherwise, you will get all the different benefits at this conference. So check out theeffectivestatistician.com and register for this conference without spending so much money on travel and all these other things. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video-on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.org to learn more about all the different activities that PSI contributes to, and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of the Effective Statistician. And today I'm super happy to have Jessica on the show, because she represents a function that biostatisticians work a lot with. And yeah, sometimes there's some tensions there as well. So Jessica, maybe you can introduce yourself.
Thank you for having me, Alexander. I'm happy to join this episode. Yeah, actually, I'm Jessica Cordes. I'm working in clinical operations since more than 15 years nowadays, becoming older, by the way. Yeah, I'm mainly on my way in oncology as well as cell and gene therapy, starting from day zero with a clinical trial design where we have the first connect to the biostatistician, until we are writing the clinical study report. So all the operational feasibility and the operational planning and conduct is something I'm very experienced with.
Yeah. And you actually run your own company now.
That's true. Since a few months, I'm running my own company, being a consultant for especially smaller companies, but also mid-sized companies. Whenever they have a resource or expertise demand, I can help. And by the way, I launched a training academy as well with a first digital training course. So I'm trying to share my knowledge in the digital world as well.
Awesome. And we'll link to your homepage and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. So that's really, really great. So clinical operations. So for those that are maybe a little bit more new to the industry and haven't been so much in touch with clinical operations people yet, what do clinical operations actually do?
Yeah, that's a good question I'm often get to be on. So it's really starting to think about the clinical trial design and think about how to plan your clinical trial in a way that it's operational feasible for the physicians, for the patients, for the service provider being involved, and obviously for the sponsor as well. So here, the first aspect is already trying to be smart and have some innovative approaches to balance the quality you need to come up with, but at the same time, the timelines you need to achieve your goals and the budget you need to fulfill all the tasks required. So it's really starting from protocol writing. We have some impact there. If you need service provider, the service provider selection, all the functional plans about clinical monitoring, maybe even data management. Sometimes we are covering that as well. Yeah, how to select your physicians, your sites, where to find your patients. Here again, patient recruitment, identification, but the whole procedure at the site is something clinical operations is thinking about. And we are trying to ensure that the contractual basis is there. The documents are available when it comes to how do we envision that the clinical trial is conducted? And at the same time, we are rolling out the training to all the involved parties to ensure that they are conducting the trial according to our plan.
Mm-hmm. What has been your work experience working with statisticians been up to now?
Oh, very mixed.
Okay.
I think there is always some kind of stereotype in a specific functional area. And this is really without value, right? It's really like a specific character. And I believe you need a specific character to work in a specific field. So in clinical operations as well, and I assume in biostatistician world, it's the same. You need to be very picky and think about details.
Mm-hmm.
This is something where I'm very hands-on with the statistical colleagues, because the mindset how to approach topics, questions, challenges is very detailed and thought through.
Mm-hmm.
This is something where I think we have a good fit.
Yeah.
On the other hand, my experience is in the biostatistics world, you have a completely different language, right?
Yeah.
And so do we have a complete different language in clinical operations? And this is something you need to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some hurdles in the beginning while interacting and connecting to each other, because everybody was more like in a silo, thinking mm-hmm. like, okay, I'm doing my tasks I'm assigned to do, and then I push the result to you and then you can continue. Without understanding each other and the rationale behind the outcome we see, I find it pretty difficult, because you're losing energy.
Mm-hmm.
You are not completely understanding each other. So I'm a fan of a robust training for clinical operations. They need to be aware what are the main drivers for specific statistical considerations. Oh gosh, we are not statistics, right? So yeah. This is really heavy, heavy food for us. But the basic concepts, this is something we should understand and why we are coming up with a statistical method or some approach, right? Because biostatisticians are giving us the number of patients we need to recruit, the number of events we need to look for. And this is impacting our site feasibility, site selection, our monitoring approach, how closely we are monitoring the data we are capturing. So it's also impacting data management. And this brought us always to robust spaces when we started to talk to each other and try to understand the other language.
Mm-hmm.
And understand the vocabulary the other side is using, because only then you are aligned and you have a good, equal starting point.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's very, very important to understand what's important for the other person. Yeah, what are, for example, crucial constraints that you have? Okay, create a common goal that you want to reach. Yeah. If you talk about quality, yeah, that means something very, very different to different people. Yeah.
Agreed.
And so, for example, if you think about quality from your point of view, what does a high quality study actually means to you?
For me, I'm really driven by GCP. So quality means I can ensure the patient is safe,
mm-hmm,
and the data are reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most portion, right? Because it's interconnected to each other. Data reliability, just two words, but meaning so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's really starting from being smart how to collect the data, whether to automate any imports and minimize the manual entry.
Mm-hmm.
By that, you can minimize the error. And error is meaning something else than the statistical error here, right?
Yeah.
Then you need to review those data, the clinical monitoring activities, but also the medical monitoring activities, the drug safety activities, so safety monitoring. So it's such an interdisciplinary field that everybody needs to review data from a different angle,
mm-hmm,
that you need to be very smart and very clear how the data are captured, how data flow is going, who is receiving which information, whether you check it, are there any QC steps, or is it possible to get automated? Are you importing data? You know, so I had a very, very emotional discussion about, is it worth to import ECF data into your safety database?
These kind of connections.
These kind of
play a big role.
You have, right? And, you know, I got a statement that, well, I don't care which data are captured in your ECF because the Bible is the safety database. And I said, I can't agree to this statement. And, you know, this person was very commercially driven, so completely understood where this person was coming from. But even with a commercial product, and you're not reconciling your data between the ECF and the safety database, you might miss some serious events.
Yeah, or kind of misinterpreted.
Even if they might have not been classified as serious, right? Then you're completely blind spotted.
Yeah.
Think about the statistical analysis at the end, right? So you need to ensure that you have a very good quality, because it's for your own decision-making process in the end as a sponsor.
Yeah, but also for patients and physicians out there. Yeah. One of the things that really helps a lot if you work in a clinical trial as a statistician is understanding how data happens. Yeah. So I can highly recommend that you speak with your clinical operations person and ask whether you can attend one of the site monitorings. Yeah. Possibly there's a site close to you, yeah, which is monitored and we can have just watch what they're doing, what are the discussions there, what are kind of the typical questions, how's the data entry system looking from there? And how's the, you know, engagement with the patients going? These kind of things will help you a lot to understand how data happens, where the challenges are, what kind of things that you have thought about could be easy are not that easy. Yeah. And that helps you a lot about seeing kind of how you can streamline studies and where most of the effort is coming from.
That's a very interesting approach. I completely agree, because you get a better picture what's happening at the site, and you can feel the administrative burden for the site when being there, right? This is so much underestimated. So coming back to the operational feasibility, which is the core business for clinical operations, unfortunately, often we are not really heard in regards to site burden and administrative burden. And I would love a lot of functions to go this way and undergoing this kind of training, attending a site visit, sitting there, watching, learning, and seeing how much stress the site has, especially during treatment visits, right? Or screening visits, where you have so many assessments. Mm-hmm. So it's not easy to collect all these data.
Yeah.
I agree.
In terms of feasibility, what are kind of key things that you look into when you speak about trial feasibility?
Well, the key things are coming from GCP, right? Is the investigator experience? Has he or she enough knowledge about the indication, the product type? Is enough stuff available? Are the facilities okay? So this is the general stuff you are always looking to, because it's mandated by GCP. In addition to that, what I learned, especially when I worked for cell and gene therapy clinical trials, is the cultural component, the communication component. So really worth during the site feasibility is already to create an understanding of how the site is communicating to potential clinical trial participants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To understand the information flow, the communication flow, how this is working, because this might be a little bit site specific. So how is a site identifying potential patients, and which steps are required, and how the patient is routed through the screening process until the site is achieving to enroll the patient? Because the main challenge we all see in clinical trials, to be honest, is patient recruitment.
Yep.
So this is the operational portion. And the other portion might be more the statistical one, right? So you guys, you are telling us we need 100 patients, right? And then it's on us to say, okay, how many sites do I need to mm-hmm. enroll these 100 patients? And especially in cell and gene therapy, we are talking about 70 to 95% screen failure rate.
Yeah.
This is massive, right? And then you can open up a lot of sites, but you're burning your resources, because it's an effort, and you are also burning your budget. So you need to try a little bit smart in selecting your sites to find the right sites. Yep. And the same is true to find the right patients, right? So understanding the whole process step by step is creating you a good basis to see whether online patient recruitment can help you create a patient enrollment plan, how to find the patients, but also the right patients to come up with the required number. And in addition to that, even the communication between the departments within the site. If you think about hospitals, you might have one main department conducting your clinical trial, but maybe 4, 5, 7 other departments being involved. And they are impacting your data reliability in the end. They are capturing data for you. And, you know, it's especially in early clinical trials, the biostatistician is making the assumptions based on the data you are getting. And it's on us to ensure that you get high quality data, because only then you are able to make the statistical analysis in a good way. Think about dose escalations, very early clinical trials, or even the modern designs with Bayesian statistics, where you're rolling up your dose by patient even, right? Yeah. Or you want to enrich treatment arms based on the data you see. So those designs are more and more mandating the clinical operations activities being adequate and on time with an ongoing activity supporting the biostatistics, because you are on the way and continuously analyzing and adapting the clinical trial design, right? So I believe in future with the modern designs, the biostatisticians and the clinical operations professionals with all the different functions, we are even living closer to each other than we are used to already.
Absolutely. Yes. The more adaptive the design, the more closer you need to work with clinical operations, because then you need to have, you know, all your data cleaned in time. You need to speak about assumptions much more. You need to talk about feasibility much more. You need to talk about kind of, you know, all kind of different things. Yeah. Having the right doses at the right sites. There's so many kind of things that you might not think about as a statistician, that makes it really, really hard on the clinical operation side. So speak through these, you know, what does it mean if we make that assumption, or if we have this design feature, what does that mean from a clinical operations point of view is really, really important. You mentioned screen failures, and that's a really, really big topic. What's your experience in terms of statistical input that can help to improve this kind of screen failure problem?
So I have a lot of experience in smaller biotech companies. Mm-hmm. And I need to admit, I never received any feedback. Because the biostatistician colleague never thought probably that there is an impact beside the general clinical trial design, right? So we were only giving the numbers, right? So we got some medical assumptions around the discontinued patients. Mm-hmm. From the biostatisticians, we got the sample size or number of events. But that's it.
Yeah, because...
Tell me more.
Yeah, there can definitely be much more interactions on all these different steps. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you think about what are the main drivers for screen failures, yeah, how important are they? What are the diagnostic tools that you use there for screen failures? Are these things that you can make easier? Yeah. Is there maybe some kind of two-step approach instead of doing directly kind of a lab test? Yeah, that gives you absolute clarity of whether the patient can be enrolled, and maybe that lab test, I don't know, takes a week. Maybe there's some other tests that you can directly kind of do so you can screen out easier, yeah. Mm-hmm. Things like that. The other point is what you mentioned is discontinuation, you know, of treatment, yeah, especially with thinking about asthma, managing how you capture data after patients have discontinued treatment is a really, really important thing, yeah. I have seen lots of miscommunications there where people think like discontinuation means discontinuation from the study, but actually discontinuation from treatment does not necessarily imply discontinuation from the study. Yeah.
Yeah.
These things play a big role. And yeah, what do we offer to patients once they kind of discontinue the, you know, the blinded treatment also can have a major impact on recruitment, discontinuation rates, all these kind of different things. if you have compliance problems, compliance and not so much in GCP for compliance, but kind of adherence to treatment and things like that, or staying in the study because of the burden of the study, What happens if patients move, from one side to the other, And my best story with working with clinical operations was actually in my first phase three studies that I worked in. Once got an email from one of the countries that were included in the study and asking what they do with patients when they switch sides. And do they keep their patient ID? Kind of was thinking, that's kind of a weird question. And I got on the phone with the respective person, and that person explained, well, that patient got randomized in that site, but was randomized to the comparator. Because it was an open study, that patient then said, no, I don't want so. The comparator, I want the active, And so discontinued from the study in that site, moved to the next site and wanted to be randomized again. And just because of the close relationship, we could identify this challenge and get it resolved. And of course, that patient wasn't randomized again.
That's a very good example where you can see that risk management in the very, very early beginning of your clinical trial is already required and is also including all functional area experts, including the biostatistician, right? So this is something with an open label clinical trial, it's easy to detect that you might have ethical issues because the patients obviously wants to get the verum, right? And this, sometimes you can already mitigate in your clinical trial design, right? So I was often asked, once I finalized the protocol, then I'm starting the risk management. I said, no, you should start before. Yeah. Because the risk mitigations, in best case, can influence your clinical trial design and your protocol. If you finalize that before, no chance, then you have the extra effort of an amendment.
And risk management is a really, really important topic. I actually have another episode with another chess, by the way, earlier in this podcast. So if you just scroll back as a listener, you can easily find that as well. Now, let's talk a little bit more about amendments. Very often, an amendment from a statistical point of view doesn't create a lot of work for us. What does an amendment mean from a clinical operations point of view?
Probably, I can give a harsh statement saying we are the ones suffering the most. So it really depends on the amendment, right? But I worked through some adaptive clinical trial designs just recently, and you're some kind of shocked because you're changing figures and you are adapting the treatment algorithm, the assignment, the randomization, etc. But for clinical operations, it's always like, we need to update all the functional plans. We need to check whether the documentation, like checklist forms, etc., need to be updated. We need to roll out everything with the training to the sites, but also to the vendors, to the sponsor team. And then we need to follow up that they are using the new version and not the latest version before, right? So for us, it's so much administrational burden. It's not easy to go with.
Yeah. Amendments drive a lot of work and incur a lot of costs. So minimizing amendments is really, really important. Yeah. So that's why also kind of checking for feasibility is so important, because very often amendments come because problems with recruitment. Yeah. There's problems with feasibility. And that wasn't kind of thought through very well at the beginning of the trial design. And interactions between statisticians, clinicians, and clinical operations was not optimal at that point.
Yeah, I have the same experience. Unfortunately, often the whole clinical trial planning is under time pressure, right? So if you talk to the people involved, most of the time I'm hearing something like, yeah, I know, but I haven't had enough time of the timelines given top down. But I think it's really not smart because, as you mentioned, you are initiating the first protocol amendment right away with a lot of extra effort from the administration point of view when it comes to the resources. And here we are not talking about the sponsor resources, but also the vendor resources. If they impact, I don't know, the full service CRO, data management, lab, IMP supply, but also the sites.
Mm-hmm.
You put the burden on the sites as well, and you need to get that submitted and approved before, and everything is creating costs as well. So looking back, and that's why I believe a lessons learned meeting at the end of the clinical trial is so much valuable, to look back to your clinical trial and have an estimate what has happened, and then try to extrapolate, like, if I have invested 2 more months for the planning and have a detailed planning upfront with a robust feasibility, wouldn't I have been faster, cheaper in the end? And often I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to push the industry, invest enough time for pre-planning.
Yeah.
You have a robust, detailed planning. It's a pain in the peep, right? But it's so well invested because you will speed up later on, still keep the quality and achieve your goals in time. Think about the reputational aspect of going out to your investors, telling them, oh, I promise to complete recruitment this year, but it's delayed until next year.
Yeah.
Right? Those things are even not covered in the clinical trial level, but the company reputation. You know, I work for stock market companies and the price was always going down.
Yep.
And that's something I call it a homebrewed issue. You can avoid those issues while sitting together, have a robust kickoff meeting with all parties involved, talking to each other, as you mentioned, right? Talking to the biostatistician, understanding the design and the key triggers will be even more important with the adaptive designs. And with the adaptive designs, you need to come up with your algorithm up front. So you are pushed into the detailed planning. And this is really something I like about the adaptive designs. The collaboration within the sponsor organization, but also outside of the sponsor organization, will be forced to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I believe one of the consequences we will see is that we have a good planning up front and we are just pushed into the right direction.
Yeah, because adaptive trials are great and they can help a lot and they need good planning. That is one of the most important things.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jessica, for this great discussion. We talked about lots of different parts of where clinical operations and biostatistics can work better together to make sure that we have high quality studies that deliver on time, on budget, and actually give us robust evidence so that we can make good decisions within the company, but also for regulators and ultimately for patients and physicians.
Indeed.
And we talked about we need to learn from each other in terms of the languages, the goals, the constraints that we work under. And that especially with all kind of more modern designs, more complicated designs, it's really important. We even touched on a couple of things where maybe you have never thought about doing, like visiting a site, like speaking about what are the biggest challenges in terms of recruitment, looking more closely into screening, how do you do these kind of different things, what is actually happening at the site, what are the, you know, biggest barriers where you have never thought about, you know? So this is really, really crucial.
And let's work together, right?
Yep.
Main message.
Let's work together. That is just the thing that I wanted to ask you about. What's your main takeaway? Let's work together. Thanks so much, Jessica. And maybe that wasn't the last episode.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS for help with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Please tell others about this podcast if you like it. And also, if you have already registered for the conference in November this year, thanks so much for that. Please tell others to register it as well. It will be an outstanding event. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.